Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show, that's the Copyright Forum. And joining us on the line today, Paul Rapp and Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art. If you have a question about copyright law or what's in the public domain, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Paul, Bill, and your copyright calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show is the Copyright Forum, and here to answer your questions, on the line, two guests. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues. Also, Bill Westwood, one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. You got a question about intellectual property? Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. On this Copyright Forum, Paul Rapp, welcome back, sir.
Hey, Ray, how you doing?
Good. How's the health? Everybody good during this pandemic?
Everybody's good on this end.
Well, is that Bill Westwood?
That's Bill Westwood.
All right. Well, wait your turn. I was talking to Paul Rapp. No, Bill Westwood. I'm glad you're doing well. That's good. Welcome.
Well, Paul's got to step up and answer. You know, he can't leave us hanging here.
That's right. Rule one, no dead air. But that doesn't apply in public radio. There's always those long public radio pauses. So feel free to ponder what you're about to say. All right, we'll start with this one. This is from the National Law Review last Friday, September 4th. Court denies Taylor Swift's motion to dismiss copyright infringement lawsuit. On September 2nd, 2020, a California federal judge denied musician Taylor Swift's motion to dismiss copyright infringement claims related to the lyrics in Swift's hit song Shake It Off. Now, some backstory here. The song goes back to 2014. Swift and her co-writers wrote the song Shake It Off. It debuted at number one, big hit. The chorus consists of these lyrics. 'Cause the player's gonna play, 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 play. And the haters gonna hate, 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 hate. Baby, I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake. Genius. Tis like Hamlet. Now, Sean Hall and Nathan Butler wrote a song called Player's Gonna Play in 2001 with the lyrics in the chorus saying, players, they gonna play. Haters, they gonna hate. Ballers, they gonna ball, et cetera, et cetera. So, Paul Rapp, I give it to you. Now, in 2018... a district court judge granted Swift's motion to dismiss the suit because the lyrics, quote, are too brief, unoriginal, and uncreative to warrant protection under the Copyright Act. Ninth Circuit Court disagreed with that. It's now in motion again, this lawsuit. What do you think, Paul?
I think the Ninth Circuit is actively just trying to destroy copyright law. I mean, this is ridiculous. And the Ninth Circuit was responsible for the Blurred Lines case from a few years ago with Pharrell and what's his name? I can never remember his name. It was a huge hit, and the court in the Ninth Circuit determined that it sounded too much. It had too much of a groove like a Marvin Gaye song.
Oh yeah,
They're lowering the bar to what infringement is, to the point where if you have a hit, you're going to have a target on your back because they're starting to decide that things are protectable that shouldn't be protectable. You know, music grows and develops in many ways by mimicry. And really the only things that should be protected, in my view, are the lyrics and the melody. And in the case of the Taylor Swift song, you're taking a very, very, very common street phrase. And suddenly, you know, somebody sticks it in a song and suddenly they're the only ones that can use that phrase. That's insane.
Yeah, this is particularly true, I think, in music. I don't think that, at least I haven't seen much that's indicating this is happening in illustration or photography or perhaps writing. But certainly in music, I mean, there's a new suit popping up almost every week or so, it seems like.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me, and of course, I'm no intellectual property attorney like Paul Rapp is, but it seems to me that lyrics, that would be something that you could at least quantify, but a groove. Now, that song that the judge said, okay, this is a little like Marvin Gaye, it sounds a lot like Marvin Gaye. You've heard the song, right? That's a subjective thing, though.
It's got a beat and a party track behind it, and how many songs going back 40, 50, 60 years, you know, have a heavy funk beat and a party track going on in the back. I mean, Marvin Gaye wasn't certainly the first one to do it.
Go ahead.
And the Blurred Lines guys won't be the last. Yeah. You shouldn't let these things go to a jury is in my opinion, because then it just turns into a popularity contest.
Well, I mean, you're also a musician, though. I mean, what is protectable?
Melody and lyrics, those are pretty easy to quantify. And three words or three notes are generally not gonna do it. A lot of people think there's a rule, like a 5-second rule or a 3-note rule or an 8-note rule. There's not.
Yeah.
It's really in the context of the song if it sounds too similar. And most people will know what too similar is just by hearing the two things side by side.
All right, we have to take a quick... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Paul is absolutely right. You know, if you go back and listen to, like, I like to listen to 50s and 60s music periodically, and you hear the beginning of a song, and you say, whoa, that's what so-and-so, that's such-and-such. And you realize, like Paul said, this stuff is evolutionary. It builds on what other people have been doing to a certain degree. And then I think up to a point, you know, that's not something that people should be suing over.
Okay.
You know, I guess that point is where the courts tend to get involved. But, you know, it just seems to me, like I said, that there's a new lawsuit over a song, it seems like, every time you turn around.
Well, let's take a quick break here. Bill Westwood is here. Paul Rapp is here. This is all good news because I am working currently on a new song called Band on the Run, which is a follow-up to Strawberry Fields Forever, which was a big hit for me. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Copyright Forum. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's the Copyright Forum today. If you have a question, you can ask Bill Westwood and Paul Rapp by calling 800-348-2551. And we'll get to the phones in just a minute here, gentlemen. But this email came in from Elga a while back before the show began. Elga writes, I have about 15 chapters of a manuscript almost finished. If I have one or two chapters printed in some magazine, does this lessen the interest for a publisher? That's not exactly in your wheelhouse, but you can give it a shot, gentlemen.
Yeah, I mean, that's more of a business proposition. And, you know, if having it printed, you know, causes a big commotion, if people really like it, I think it's going to hasten you getting a book deal. On the other hand, some publishers, you know, may say, and especially if you're a first-time published author, it can be exceedingly hard to get a publisher to say yes.
Yeah.
And they may use that as a reason to say no. So
right.
The answer is, you know, that could go either way, depending on the situation, I think.
Bill.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with Paul on that. But I guess if it were me, if I were that close to having a finished manuscript, unless there was a compelling reason to publish part of it ahead of time, I probably wouldn't do it, because I do think that with some publishers, they want all original material, and okay. and you're might be diluting your possibilities if you publish parts of it ahead of time.
Well, talk about saturation. Yeah. Okay, we had Elga on the line there for a moment. I was going to go for follow-up. You know, she emailed us and then also called, but hung up there because you answered the question. This other email came in from Jim, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jim writes, if I take a picture from the newspaper and give it to artists to paint a portrait, is that okay?
No. Somebody owns the copyright to that image, and unless it's, I mean, if it's a faithful rendering, you're going to have somebody coming after you for infringement.
Yeah, I mean, what many painters do is they'll get three or four photographs of the individual they want to paint to use as a reference, but won't copy any one of them, you know, and it won't copy any one of them slavishly. So you can say, oh, that's a painting of that photograph. What you end up with is a combination, and you're just using the photographs to get a good handle on
the likeness,
subject that you're
overall likeness.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jargon in Kingston. Wow, that was loud. Hello, you're on, Jargon.
Hi, thank you for getting my call here. I have a question. How do you stop a Chinese company from stealing our marketing materials that they use to run on their websites and Facebook ads? Even if I do DMCA takedown notices, they just pop up again. I've taken down over 20. There's like 30 of them running right now, and... What do you do with Chinese companies stealing copyrighted material?
Oh, okay.
Boy.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do. You know, you're playing the DMCA whack-a-mole game, and they're going to pop it right back up there. Paul, do you have any suggestions? Because the infringements I have that are foreign are, you know, you just sort of,
yeah, you just turn
away from
them.
Walk away. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. You know, unless the infringement is so grave and you have the resources to hire a Chinese counsel, which still might not do you any good just because of the lax supervision in mainland China of intellectual property laws. But yeah, I feel for you, but there's not a whole lot practically you can do that you're not already doing.
Keep playing the whack-a-mole game.
Jargon, go ahead.
So if there's like the same video like 20 times on Facebook, like what's Facebook's role in this to facilitating them? Because, you know, if I have to, I fill out one DMCA takedown notice for the same video that is across platform, it should take it down. I mean,
interesting.
You know, supposedly we have artificial intelligence existing now, so that should just recognize the same video across platform and not me having to sit there. And that DMCA Facebook form is not a fast one. It takes at least, you know, 6-7 minutes. So you don't, you know, times 10.
Yeah.
It's an hour of my day.
Right.
So
right.
I think, you know. I think it's an internet privacy thing, so I guess I'm screwed.
Well put. Paul, what do you think?
Well, I know with music, they have bots that will recognize, you know, you have to, you know, sign up and actually employ the bots to monitor and issue the takedowns automatically. I presume that Facebook would allow the same, or YouTube or whoever would have the same facility for video. Yeah. I don't know why they wouldn't, but I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. But Jargon would not be able to go after Facebook and say, you have let this go every time. Or would he?
I don't think so. You know, that's kind of fighting City Hall at this point, unless they've done something so totally egregious. But it doesn't sound like going after Facebook. What you really want is for Facebook to work with you to the extent you can get them to do anything.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to line three, and Paul in Greenwich, New York, I think, or it could be Greenwich, Connecticut. Paul.
Hello.
Where are you calling from?
Greenwich.
Aha. All right, you're on.
Hi. I have a question that's not strictly about copyright, but it's related. My wife and I are songwriters, and we're about to enter a song in a songwriting competition. It's actually a setting of a Civil War soldier's letter that's been widely published. In fact, it was used in the Ken Burns Civil War documentary series. It's been around a lot. I'm pretty sure we don't have to sign any rights to the original author or his estate. But the question is, we wanted to include him as a sort of co-writer in crediting the song. Is that a normal thing that people do, or should we do?
Anybody?
I think so. I mean, you can. You know, obviously, whatever he wrote is in the public domain now. So he or his heirs will have no legal claim to his words. You know, you can credit him for the purposes of you know, historical accuracy. You know, I just hope if you have like a big fat top 40 hit, you just didn't screw yourself out of half of the royalties by doing that. But
this is in the realm of folk music, and I don't think there are many big fat top 40 hits in folk music.
Oh, we're talking the grand folk tradition. And absolutely, you know, credit the guy.
All right, fair enough. Know? Paul, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck with that top 40 hit. Yes. The number here is 800-348-2551. Paul Rapp is here. Bill Westwood is here. It's the Copyright Forum today. And let's go to Mark in Beacon. Mark, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I design and build custom furniture. I've been doing it for many years. And I'm starting to come up with some of my own designs. And I basically photograph them, write about it, post on my website. What else do I need to do to really kind of protect these images and these pieces from being copied?
That's tough, because these are technically useful articles, and they themselves can't be copyrighted. Paul, what about possibility of copyrighting the photographs that he takes of them?
Yeah, you could copyright the photograph, but that would just stop someone from
using that
photograph. It's not going to protect, you know. Yeah, and like Bill said, the problem is copyright doesn't protect functional items. And at the Copyright Office, if you try to protect the design of a piece of furniture, their antennas go up and they go berserk looking and trying to, you know, show that every part of your piece of furniture is functional. You know, sometimes you can fastball something by them, particularly if you've got a ridiculously ornate piece of furniture. But if you've got a simple minimalist, you know, like a Danish mid-century modern kind of design, you're going to have a real hard time registering it. Mm-hmm. You could possibly get a design patent. That's going to be expensive, but, you know, if you have one design that, you know, like the Aeron chair or something, you know, if you have one design that you think is a winner and that's going to be your winning horse, I would talk to a patent attorney about possibly getting a design patent registration, because that will protect the design, notwithstanding the fact that it's a functional item. That's what design patents are for.
Mark.
Okay. Where can I track down design patent lawyers? That's the next hurdle. I've looked into it. It's a real challenge.
Have you?
Where are you located?
Contact me.
I'm sorry. So I'm in the Hudson Valley, Beacon, New York.
Yeah, in Rhinebeck. I mean, there's plenty of good. I mean, you want to get just someone who's a member of the patent bar who can file the application with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. I'm not a member of the patent bar, so you'll have to find someone that holds themselves out as a patent attorney. There's a whole bunch of good ones in Albany, for sure. In the Hudson Valley, I just moved down here. I don't know if there's that many, but I'm sure there are some. And then, of course, in New York, there's going to be, tons of them. But, there's a number of firms in Albany that specialize in patent law. And you can contact one of those and see one of them and see what they think.
All right, Mark, thanks for the call. Now, if I understand your conversations on previous shows, obtaining a patent is somewhat more complicated and expensive than copywriting your song, for instance.
Way more. Sure is.
Way more. Yeah.
All right, let's go.
I hold a patent that I got with a co-developer on a product way back in the late 80s, early 90s. And even back then, it cost us about $10,000 each.
Zoinks. Okay, let's go to line. And who's been waiting longest here? We'll go to Peter in Wappingers Falls. Peter, you're on.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Just briefly, I'm a performer, and I'm an old guy, so I'm not a big Taylor Swift fan. I got nothing against her, but I'm ashamed of her or her crew. Do they not think she has enough money? I do a lot of singing. I've sung a lot on Broadway. I do, because I'm an old guy, I sing now on Zoom. I do a lot of folk music singing, and in the folk world at least, you have melodies and lyrics that go back hundreds and hundreds of years, and they're used over and over by different groups, different solos, it's just ridiculous that players got to play, haters got to hate. It's stupid that should be some sort of legal contest. Save it for a Shakespearean soliloquy or something.
Well, she's the defendant in this case, Peter. In other words, she's getting sued.
Oh, my God, she's getting sued because somebody else used that.
Yeah, that's it, man.
Oh, who is the terrible person that used players got to play, haters got to...
Well,
who is that?
I don't know.
They should be drawn and quartered. They should be strung up.
I suspect it wasn't Bob Dylan. But, Peter, thank you for the call. I appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551, our number. It's the Copyright Forum. Matthew in East Greenbush. Matthew, you're up.
Hi. I have sort of a two-part question. One, I'm an artist that works in many different media, and some of the things that I do involve collage or assemblage, and I understand that the transformative nature of art can allow you to, say, appropriate imagery or what have you, and use it. The whole notion of what is transformative is one thing. But recently I was brought back to mind to an album cover from the early mid-80s, from 1984's Dire Straits live album Alchemy. And the gatefold album depicted a detail from a large work by an Australian artist named Brett Whiteley. And that artwork, which was over 50 feet long, was called Alchemy. And that was just a detail of that Brett Whiteley piece that was put on the Dire Straits album cover. And around the time of its release, and of course this is pre-internet, 84, so I don't remember where I had seen it, but it was probably something like Rolling Stone. There was some controversy, a lawsuit, I believe, having to do with the fact that Whiteley had incorporated, as part of a collage, which he sort of painted over and around, an image of Scrooge McDuck, and got sued by Disney. Or maybe Dire Straits got sued by Disney because they didn't realize it until they saw it on the album cover, I forget what. So, one, does anybody remember that incident of the Brett Whiteley piece and the Dire Straits album and the Disney lawsuit? Because I can't find a shred of anything about it anywhere on the internet. And B, as an artist myself, how do I prevent, you know, the boxes and boxes of things that I've sort of stashed away for potential future art use from getting me into trouble?
Paul Rapp.
Don't use any Disney characters.
Right.
Yeah.
They're very aggressive.
Paul.
Yeah, there's the law, and then there's the law according to Disney, and they're two very different things. So, you know, but other than that, you know, superheroes, you may want to you may want to steer clear of. You know, other things, you know, and you're talking about using images out of the media, out of popular culture, and having them reconstituted in your artwork, in collages and whatnot. I think you make the best art you can with the resources you can. And in terms of being transformative or using too much, you know, if you're reasonable about it, you'll know when you're using too much. You'll know when suddenly your work is not this transformative thing anymore, but it's a derivative work of the original of whatever you're taking. You know, when it becomes a predominant part of your new work is something that's pre-existing, then, you know, you have to start scratching your head and going, how can I minimize this a little bit?
Yeah, the problem with these things is there's no bright line that tells you when you've gone too far. You know, that's the difficulty, whether it's deemed transformative or not. You know, it can vary from one court to the other. And, you know, the whole concept of transformative is something that's been evolving, relatively recently. And,
all right, let's go ahead, Bill, finish it up and then we'll take a quick break here.
That's all. I'm done.
All right, let's take a quick break. It's the Copyright Forum. Paul Rapp and Bill Westwood join us. The home stretch is straight ahead. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today with Bill Westwood and Paul Rapp. And let's go to Linda in the Berkshires. Linda.
Hi, and I apologize in advance if you've already covered something like this, but I am and have been collecting last names, American last names, and they're all nouns, and they are, it's going to be a funny book, if it's a book, or whatever it ends up being, I don't know, but I have over 7,000 names, and I'm starting to categorize them because I want to do something with them, because every time I read them, I'm hysterical. I read them at parties, I read them to my friends, but they are people's names. I was in the banking industry for 30 years, and I was privy to many names, hundreds of thousands of them, as a matter of fact. So they're legitimate names with initials in the middle as well. I'm wondering, I don't even know where to begin, but I just feel like now, thank you, COVID, I had time to think about it. I want to do something with these funny names.
What a wonderfully demented idea. Bill Westwood.
Well, I think I don't know what you are thinking about doing with them. And I don't know what, you know, if this is something you published with these names, you know, complete, I don't know if that would get you into, certainly could get you into difficulty, you know, with these individuals. Paul, there are privacy laws in New York and California in particular that,
you know, might be an obstacle for you.
Linda, I just want you to know my middle name is Charles, and that means that, you know, my parents are one space away from naming me Paul Crap.
Oh, ouch. Okay. Well, thanks for that.
But, you know, and you're more than welcome to use that in your project. I won't come after you.
I'm telling you some of the names, and I can't even repeat them on the air. That's how obtuse they are and funny and kind of gross, actually. But let me just tell you very quickly why I thought of this. Someone recently, and they were on your show, as a matter of fact, the last couple of years, published a book of street names. And I know that's not like a personal name, but he went into the details of how some street names were developed, especially hundreds of years ago. And that's
right.
That's where the interest came. And again, I never really thought about would I want my name published. But there's so many. I have 15 of the same names, but obviously publish one to prove that, I mean, it's a name, you know?
I mean, how could you all right, Paul Rapp or Bill or one of you, how could you get in trouble for this? A name is a name. Yeah. If Linda
exactly.
If Linda writes a book and copyrights the book, what's the difference?
I don't think, you know, you're just saying the person's name. You're not saying anything about their character. You're not holding them up to ridicule other than the fact that their name is funny in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's just so, you know, and I don't think that's anything.
You said the name Taylor Swift, Leonardo da Vinci, Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert Goulet, Audrey Hepburn. I have all those names. They're not those people, though. They're people on my list of my banking list.
Well, don't get in trouble with the bank, Linda. That's one thing.
I have animals. I have every, you name it. I have every category, probably 25 categories of names.
It's just so crazy.
Well,
it might
wonderful.
Work.
I know what Paul is saying, but if you offend the wrong person, that doesn't mean they won't hire an attorney and come after you.
To do what? You said
Taylor
her.
Swift.
Yeah,
okay, but
it's a hard road to hoe. I mean, Kramer in Seinfeld was based on a guy named Kramer who was a friend of Seinfeld, and he sued, and that lawsuit actually went on for a while, but he wound up getting nowhere. But, you know, and that lawsuit had a lot more beef than just saying someone's name. You know, I mean, you had this fully developed absurd character named Kramer who was falling down all the time. And, you know, and so I could see someone having an issue or at least seeing an opportunity to make some quick money with a lawsuit from that. But
it would still
the name.
It would still cost her money to defend against that.
Yeah.
If someone chose to sue.
Since you've actually put a little bit of a wrench, of course, in my possible fortune.
When people bring vexatious,
Paul, you finish, and then Linda can ask her question.
Yeah, when people bring vexatious lawsuits like that, the press a lot of times takes notice, and you wind up getting a whole bunch of free advertising that is, you know, you wouldn't be able to afford. You know, I mean, it's great.
Right.
So there's that.
All right, Linda, you finish up here, and then we got to go.
Okay, I just wanted to know, I've been on the internet just once with this because it just started to come to, and I didn't get a response from a cryptic publisher or whatever I put in, published idea, whatever. I don't know where to start without going to 15 different places. Where do I begin to think about where I should go?
Write the book first.
You've got to prepare something that you can send to them rather than just an idea, so that they understand exactly what you're attempting to do.
All right, Linda, we really got to move it along here, but thank you. And that's an interesting one. Elizabeth in South Carolina. Elizabeth, you're on.
Oh, hi. As a painter, I understand that I need to put, like when they sign my paintings, or maybe on the back of the painting, I need to put a C, you know, the copyright, a C in a circle.
And
what I'm wondering is who... No?
I mean, it's not required, but, you know.
Correct.
And you certainly don't need to put it on the front. You don't need to deface your painting with a copyright notice. You know, if you put it on the back, that's fine. But it's certainly not a requirement.
It's not a requirement to protect your work.
But it's helpful.
That's not really the question in and of itself.
Okay.
What I'm thinking of doing, because I have a very common name, I'm thinking of using my painting name, but I'm wondering whether it's better to copyright it or simply have my name changed legally to that.
Is your last name Picasso right now by any chance?
No.
No? Okay.
You can register a copyright using a pseudonym.
That's
fine.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The copyright registration, not just the copyright notice itself, but the copyright registration gives you certain protections that you would not have otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, as I asked before, would it be better if I just, you know, change my name legally? Would that be, like, better on?
That doesn't really matter, I don't think.
No. That's not going to give you any protection against theft of the intellectual property or your image or anything like that.
Okay.
I do worry about the Chinese, like, putting a little piece of my, a little corner of my painting on a paper napkin or a paper plate or something.
Yeah.
But that,
we all worry about that.
Yeah.
That's tough.
For the last lady, there was someone out there, and probably from the last century, and a man was evil and mean enough to name his daughter. His name was Hogg, and he named his daughter Ima.
Oh, for Pete's sake. All right. Well, thank you, Elizabeth. We appreciate that one. 800-348-2551. Ian in Albany. Ian, you're on.
Hi. How are you today?
Hey, you know.
Good.
Ever since the pandemic hit back in February, we've been broadcasting our church services via Zoom.
Yeah.
And I can't find any guidance about whether we need to get copyright permission from ASCAP, et cetera, when we use popular music. For the church music that we have a one license through the church. But we do want to make sure that the composers or their heirs get paid, and I can't find any guidance from Zoom or from ASCAP about how to proceed to regularize it. So we've been avoiding that material so far and just doing public domain stuff.
Yeah, Gregorian chants and whatnot. Paul, what do you think?
Well, I think if you've already got licenses with ASCAP and BMI for public performances in your church, I think you can assume for now that those will cover Zoom, you know, because you're not doing it to a bigger audience than you did in the church. You're just doing it virtually, and you're certainly not using the licenses within the church at the moment. So I would just assume that the licenses you have are good enough. And I think as time goes on, there'll be some clarity with, you know, FaceTime and Zoom and Skype and all the rest on what licenses cover what. But, you know, you're paying them money already, and I don't think there's any reason to pay them more. I mean, they'll let you know if that's not the case, but I wouldn't worry about it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the rise of all these.
Go ahead, Ian.
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, we're not. We don't have an ASCAP license because if you use a single song within the confines of your sanctuary, that seems to be an exception under ASCAP. But when you're in Zoom, it goes all over the place. And so that's why I'm wondering, do we need a license?
Well, but the Zoom would still go to the same audience, would it not? I mean, are you broadcasting it beyond your members?
It's a closed circuit. In other words, your members are only the ones who get it, right?
Not necessarily. They can sign in from Oregon if they are interested in the service.
Gotcha.
I mean, I suppose we could control if the way to do it is to control that, we can do that.
Okay. Well, Paul, I'll let you have the last word on this one, and then we will move on.
Yeah, I just wouldn't worry about it. I would consider Zoom to be the extension of the sanctuary of the church, and you know, play whatever you want. And you know, if someone comes along and has a problem, and I doubt very seriously anybody will, then you can address it at that time. But it certainly sounds reasonable to me to just continue on Zoom doing things the way you did in church.
All right, Ian, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to John in Averill Park. John, you're on.
Hi, I'm working on a documentary film, and in the process, it's a 1908 cold case murder. I've interviewed two folks that are alive today that implicated their grandfather in this murder, and I'm wondering is this a copyright issue? Is a liability? I have talent releases from these folks. How afraid of this should I be?
Hmm.
Good question. I don't see it as a copyright issue. Do you, Paul?
No, it's really a matter of privacy, and it's a matter of public concern. So you certainly have a pretty wide berth over what you can say. And it's not you saying that the grandfather did the murder. It's these two other witnesses that you interviewed. You know, they might be the ones with a privacy or a defamation issue, but if you don't have any reason to think that they're making this up, you're just reporting. And so I think you're good to go.
Gotcha. So the only thing I really have to worry about is if for some reason another family member just decides they want to do a blanket lawsuit, then of course nothing protects you in that. Then you just have to pony up and lawyer up.
Is the grandfather still around, or is he dead?
No, the grandfather is dead.
Well, then but you're not going to have a problem with the grandfather, and the heirs don't inherit, at least in New York State, don't inherit any right to bring a defamation lawsuit on behalf of the deceased. So I think you're good.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Now, this is in the last minute here, a follow-up from Matthew, who called in about Scrooge McDuck. And he wrote, said, the one thing that wasn't answered during my call was, had either of you heard about the circa 1984 Disney lawsuit against either Dire Straits or Brett Whiteley, or know what was the outcome of that suit?
I've not heard of it.
No. He goes on to say, I suspect that the image of Scrooge McDuck, which was only a couple inches long in the scope of Whitley's 53-foot collage, could hardly have been considered a focal point in any sense in that context. Even though the album cover was barely a detail from that huge painting, the image is barely discernible even at that level of magnification.
Yeah, and that just shows you how depraved Disney can be.
Well, I don't know. All right, well, listen, guys, we're just about out of time here. Paul Rapp, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
I'm reachable at paul@paulrapp.com.
All right. And Bill Westwood, if you desire anyone to get in contact with you, how would they do that?
Westwood@capital.net.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for being here. You know, I say this every time, but maybe next time it'll be okay and we'll get you in the studio. All right?
I hope so. I miss your face, man.
Wow. You're the first person ever to say that. And maybe it's time for that eye checkup. Hey, listen, guys, thanks a lot for being here. Support comes from Interim Healthcare, thanking their caregivers working to help people remain safe in their homes, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com. Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the Greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. At Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, New York Farm Cidery with Outdoor Cafe Thursday through Sunday, local hard cider, merchandise, and apparel, also through shipping. NinePinCider.com. Once again, thanks to Bill Westwood and Paul Rapp for joining us via the telephone today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Kayleen White took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we welcome back old favorite, although he's not that old, Jason Goff. We'll talk weather with meteorologist Jason Goff tomorrow. Right now, stand by for the book show.